You want a war? You're gonna get one.
Welcome to episode 107 of Reliving the War. It's the 11th of November 1997, and it's the night after Survivor Series. Raw comes live from Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, while WCW Nitro's live from the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis, Tennessee. Usually I'd say here you need to check out the pay-per-view video to appreciate what's happening on this week's episode, but I'm sure you know the story. Bret Hart lost the WWF Championship in the infamous Montreal Screwjob, and both Raw and Nitro are going to kick off with promos that concern Montreal and the Hitman Bret Hart. Speaking of Bret Hart, we have a jam-up girl this week. Tony had a big night out and she dressed for the occasion with both style and class. She said her jam shirt brought all the boys to the yard. A big thanks to Tony, our second jam-up girl, and thanks to everyone who visited Chinlocks and grabbed a shirt or hoodie. This is the COVID episode. Remember how I said Disco Inferno's theme was more catchy than COVID? Yeah, I listened to it so much that I caught COVID, so apologies if the voice sounds even worse than normal. I just didn't want to miss an episode. Alright, let's do it then. This is episode 107 of Reliving the War. The NWO cut a promo and the Blue Bloods take on Harlem Heat on Nitro. Shawn Michaels cuts a promo on Raw. The DX theme song plays in the arena and the faction are going to walk to the ring for the very first time while Break It Down plays in the background. Ravishing Rick Rude comes out and the fans boo him so much that he has to restart his introduction a few times. He tells all these out of shape Ottawa idiots to shut their mouths, open their eyes and give respect to the headliner, the showstopper, the main event and the man who, against all odds, became WWF champion last night. The crowd chanted bullshit during that last part. Sean Hunter and China come out and they watch their entrance video for a moment before joining Rude in the ring. Jim Ross then confirms that Bret Hart has left the WWF for fans who were unaware, and he says there's going to be a bit more information later on, but there really isn't. Watch this promo back when you get a chance though, because Sean sounds absolutely wrecked. Either he didn't sleep too well or he emptied the fanny pack in spectacular fashion after Survivor Series, but it's painfully obvious that he's not 100% tonight, let's just say that. Rick Rude congratulates Sean for his title win and you'll want to keep this little moment in mind for next week. Sean says DX are on top of the world as the fans chant "We want Bret," and HBK says he thought about coming out here and being politically correct, but instead he's gonna unload tonight on Raw's War. For those fans chanting "We want Bret," HBK says he beat Bret Hart in his home country with his own finishing hold, and because Sean's now the World Wrestling Federation champion, DX are gonna become even more difficult to deal with. Sean then says the World Wrestling Federation was not big enough for Shawn Michaels and the Heartbreak Kid.
Big enough for the Heartbreak Kid and Shawn Michaels.
HBK says he heard Bret give up while in the sharpshooter and Sean ran Bret's ass down south with the rest of those dinosaurs. He then remembers he has friends down south, so he says the guys who aren't dinosaurs in WCW are gonna beat the hell out of Bret one day whether he likes it or not. Sean says he's the true icon. Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, none of these guys have the will to be the best. Sean has something that all those guys never will, and that's God-given, pure, natural talent. Ken Shamrock eventually comes to the ring, a guy who almost didn't show up to Raw after what happened in Montreal, and Sean sarcastically says he's gonna give Ken the microphone, and all Ken has to do is put a few words together. We call that a sentence. Shamrock calls DX a disgrace before addressing China.
And you! Whatever you call yourself, man or female or whatever you want to call yourself.
Triple H flips Ken off as the crowd pops, and then Shamrock calls China a kitchen.
Sure as hell ain't no kitchen or no woman or man or whatever the hell you are.
Yeah, Shamrock wants a fight with Shawn Michaels, so HBK gets ready. Shamrock calls Rick Rude an old man before telling Shawn he's about to punch a hole in his sexy chest. HBK says this woman China could knock Ken out, as could this old man Rick Rude. Triple H would have no problems with Shamrock and neither would HBK. And just then, Sergeant Slaughter comes down to the ring. HBK calls him Sergeant Slobber, and he tells the commissioner he doesn't want to wear a raincoat for this promo, so anything he has to say, he should say it in the direction of Mr. Shamrock. Slaughter announces that Ken Shamrock's the number one contender, and he's going to get a WWF title shot. Sean isn't going to wrestle Ken tonight though, Triple H is. DX are barred from ringside, and Slaughter's going to hang around the ring tonight during the main event to make sure there's no interference. So we assume that Shamrock gets his title shot at the next pay-per-view, D-Generation X in your house. This went on forever, by the way, and I'm sorry for being so long-winded. That's 20 minutes of Raw's War already over. The New World Order open up Nitro, and they've only gone and got themselves some Canadian flags. This can only mean one thing, really, can't it? Bischoff says he has two big surprises for the fans tonight. First, Kevin Nash is back. Nash comes to the ring in a wheelchair. He's getting pushed along by Six, and yeah, sorry, I definitely thought Six was done in WCW by this point. Nash jumps up from his wheelchair, he gets welcomed back by his NWO buddies, and he addresses the Giant. Big Sexy says there's nothing he'd like to do more than give the Giant the beating of his life, but Kevin Nash doesn't work for free. If the Giant wants to lock horns, then he has to do it in the World War III Battle Royal in Nash's hometown of Detroit, Michigan. Bischoff says it's time for the next big surprise. Eric says not only does he get to hang around with all these cool NWO dudes, but he also gets the opportunity to spend a billionaire's money. Eric uses that money to surround himself with the biggest and most impressive names in the sport today, so the newest addition to the NWO is none other than Bret the Hitman Hart.
Because you were such a knockout kind of guy.
Hey, that's Jam Up Guy. Get it right, you fucking spawner. Hogan says Bret already passed the initiation after what he did backstage at Survivor Series, and Bischoff then says he has a special gift for Bret. Elizabeth stands in front of the faction as Buff Daddy hands out pages to the boys, and the commentators are shocked that Bischoff just said Bret Hart's name. The NWO then sing the Canadian National Anthem completely out of tune while Kevin Nash rubs his lyric sheet on Vincent's head. Kurt Hennig tries to take over as lead vocalist when Bischoff makes a mess of the anthem, and even Mr. Perfect himself can't save this one. Bischoff asks the fans to give it up for the newest member of the NWO, and the promo ends. So Jim Ross just confirmed on Raw that Bret's gone, and Bischoff confirmed on Nitro that Bret's on his way to WCW very, very soon. The NWO disappear, and Mean Gene says there was a confrontation between Bret Hart and a rival promoter last night at Survivor Series. If you want to hear all about it, call the WCW hotline. Peak Monday Night Wars, ladies and gentlemen, this is the stuff we live for. We've got ourselves a match on Nitro. It feels absolutely redundant looking at a Nitro tag team match after those promos, but Harlem Heat take on the Blue Bloods, Regal and Dave Taylor. It's been a while since these two boys have teamed up. The commentators discuss Bret Hart during the matchup, and they aren't so sure if Bret would leave the World Wrestling Federation to specifically join the New World Order. World War III gets plugged quite a bit, and even though Rey Mysterio vs Eddie Guerrero's booked on that pay-per-view, those two are going to wrestle tonight on Nitro. It was all Harlem Heat in this match. Booker and Stevie were all over the Blue Bloods, but check this out. Dave Taylor totally missing his cue. Regal had to remind Taylor to run over to Booker, but Booker jumped off the rope after waiting around for way too long. This made Booker look bad, with the commentators saying Booker looked uneasy on the top rope when the whole time he was just waiting for his opponent. Still, the Blue Bloods pick up an upset victory here, with Taylor pinning Stevie after a butterfly suplex. Not sure why they give this one to the Blue Bloods. The commentators are just as surprised as the fans, but there you have it. A loss for Booker T and Stevie Ray. Mark Merrow vs Ahmed Johnson on Raw, Disco Inferno vs Chris Jericho on Nitro. We'll be breezing over quite a few of these matches because the opening promos have taken up a fair chunk of time this week on Reliving the War, but there are a few matches we'll look at with a little more detail later on. Disco and Jericho brawled at the opening bell like they had some sort of blood feud going on. Jericho gets the best of Disco, and Disco goes down after a clothesline, but the fans aren't paying attention to the ring. Raven's here with his band of merry men, and the group gets their official name when Mike Tenay calls them the Flock. The audience watched Raven walking around the arena for the remainder of the match. Nobody paid attention to Disco and Jericho. They missed some Disco dancing during a sunset flip, and they missed Disco's failed second rope elbow drop too. Chris performs a double underhook backbreaker. We see the Walls of Jericho, and Disco Inferno jobs out once again. After the bout, Smackhead Kidman throws a cup of piss all over Disco Inferno, and Disco loses it. He hits Kidman with a Stone Cold Chartbuster, but Sick Boy then clocks Disco and the Flock launch an attack. Pirate Scotty Riggs shows up to save Disco, but Riggs won't punch Raven. Raven gives him a free shot, but Scotty just won't do it. Riggs just walks away while looking at the man who cost him his eye, as if to say, thanks Raven. Marvelous Mark Merrill and Ahmed Johnson got eliminated in their respective Survivor Series matches last night, so we've got ourselves a battle of the losers here on Raw. And you know how this one goes. It's another low blow from Mark Merrill, only this time he gets caught. Referee Jack Doan stops Merrill from scoring in Ahmed's end zone, and Ahmed wins via disqualification. Merrill lifts Ahmed up for the TKO. He says fuck it and he drops Ahmed like a bad habit. Absolute shite. Big Butterbean watched this one from the audience, wearing the sickest sweater you're gonna see all week, no doubt. Mr. Bean gets involved in the show a little later on too. The Barbarian vs. Glacier on Nitro, Takamichi Noku vs. Devon Storm on Raw. Old Chili Chode seems to be in limbo at the moment, and it's a fascinating case of a wrestler scoring a ton of wins on TV, yet still nobody giving a flying fuck, including the guys writing these shows. Just throw Glacier out there, waste a few minutes of TV time, spend a shitload of money on his entrance, it's all good. Glacier performs his usual sweeps and kicks and all that good stuff, and just as the Barbarian was making his comeback, Jimmy Hart made his way down to the ring. Jimmy's here to support the Barbarian, but really he's just here to take a bump in the Mid-South Coliseum, and boy did he ever bump when Glacier hit him with a cryonic kick. He got folded up pretty good here. Glacier then nails Barbarian with a cryonic kick when Barbie jumped from the top rope. Glacier wins, and surely he must be in line for a world title shot at this point. Hogan versus Glacier at Starrcade. Just when you think it's safe to do your little kung fu celebration after a hard fought match, the man called Ming makes an appearance. Yes, and look at this, just take a moment and look at this. Take it all in. Is there anything on this planet more beautiful than seeing Glacier in tremendous amounts of pain? I really don't think there is. Brings a tear to your eye, this stuff. After the commercial break, Raven jumps in the ring with Saturn and he apologizes to one-eyed Riggs and he says it was just an accident. I don't believe him. Raven then stands up and we see Smackhead Kidman and Sick Boy on the outside. Raven says he's had a rough childhood, he was teased, he was taunted, tormented, picked on and beaten up. Yes Raven, we know. Raven says now all the freaks, mutants and misfits, the unwanted, the dreads of society have crawled out of their mom's basements to stand beside Raven in his mission to seek vengeance. He says this is all our faults, we shouldn't blame Raven, and oh, hello sexy, look at this fucking goon right here. Raven wraps it up, quote the Raven, nevermore, blah blah blah, and that's Van Hammer guys. He's went from an 80s hair metal dude stuck in the 90s to a confused makeup sporting grunger zombie crossbreed who's a few years late to the party. Looks like anyone could join the flock. Hopefully we'll see Roadblock and the Renegade join the ranks also. Over on Raw, the light heavyweight tournament continued when Devon Storm took on Takamichi Noku. Brian Christopher was once again on hand to provide commentary for this one, and Taka wasn't messing around with this dropkick right here. Devon's face almost slipped off his head. Taka followed this up with an Asai moonsault, but Devon showed he could perform some aerial offense too. Not as slick as Takamichi Noku, though it was still passable. Dangerous Devon Storm performed a dropkick back in the ring and he pulled off a vaulting somersault leg drop. Taka answers with a tornado DDT, and Brian Christopher's making fun of Devon Storm's big nose as the match continues on. Even Jim Cornette gets in on the action too, and yeah, forgot to say, Cornette's on commentary tonight with JR for Raw's first 60 minutes. Taka misses a top rope splash and Storm takes advantage, hitting a Death Valley driver on the tournament favourite, but only scoring a 2 count. Storm misses a moonsault, Taka replies with a superplex, and then Taka goes upstairs and his spinning wheel kick connects with Devon's knee. Don't think this was intentional. Too sexy Brian Christopher leaves the commentary table and he creeps around the ring. Taka knocks Christopher off the apron with a dropkick, Storm takes the Michinoku driver, and Taka advances in the light heavyweight tournament. Christopher gets taken out with a Takamichinoku springboard crossbody, and Brian runs away after raking Taka in the face.
Forget the Montreal screw job. Come to Alex's room and get the real screwing of a lifetime.
Oh, big bloodlust. Big bloodlust.
Goldust cuts a promo next on Raw, and we've got Yuji Nagata versus Alex Wright on Nitro. Yuji Nagata's been on a roll recently, but surely that winning streak ends tonight. More like Yuji not got a hope in hell. Alex thinks he's being all smart, but he gets kicked in the head and he contemplates getting a new line of work on the outside. He snaps out of it though, remembering he was born to be the best wrestler in the universe, and he beats the shit out of Nagata as Tony Schiavone tells us about another World War III match, Yuji Nagata vs Ultimo Dragon. If Dragon wins, he'll get 5 minutes all alone with Sonny Ono, and Dragon can then have his way with him. Sounds pretty spicy. Back in the ring, Alex climbs to the top, but Nagata's done his homework. He knows the weak spot. The big bratwurst smashes into a million little pieces when Nagata kicks the ropes, and Alex gets superplexed. Still, Alex knows the bratwurst grows back, so he stays resilient, and Nagata gets his head dropped on the top turnbuckle. Alex delivers the one-foot stomp, but it's not enough. Nagata replies with an exploder suplex. Alex answers with a back suplex, and on the outside, Sonny Ono hands Debra some cash, and then he kisses her. I mean, he did pay, so I don't see what the big deal is, but Debra's offended and Ono gets slapped across the face. Seriously though, my favourite thing about this was Ono licking his dirty wee lips before sticking them on Debra. Creepy little bastard. Anyway, Alex watched this all go down and it distracted him long enough for Nagata to apply the Nagata lock. Yuji doesn't lay down for it because there is a third leg in the way, but Alex taps out and the win streak continues for Yuji Nagata. Goldust has got some explaining to do. Not only did he leave his wife, but he also left Vader during the Team USA vs Team Canada match, and that's even worse than leaving your wife. He's wearing a smoking jacket and it says on his cast, "I am back." His face paint is evolving too, and we're witnessing a change in the Goldust character. It was sorely needed, by the way. I'm not saying what he eventually becomes was good or anything, but a change was needed. 1996 Goldust, I felt, was leagues better than 1997 Goldust. He says here that Jim Ross knew what his dad put him through from a young age, and after that torment, he stepped into another layer of hell by getting married. He says he was never allowed to be himself as a husband, but during those 30 days that Marlena was gone, Goldust found somebody else and he had a pretty good time. He got something that his wife could never give him. Big Vader comes to the ring all annoyed about what happened at Survivor Series, and he tells Goldust that nobody walks out on Vader. Nobody. Goldust says he didn't get cleared to wrestle at Survivor Series, but Vader isn't buying it. Goldust is just making up excuses, so Goldust gets powerbombed and the big man leaves the ring afterwards. So nothing was explained really. Who did Goldust get with during those 30 days? Butterbean watched this promo with a look of amusement and confusion, but still, nothing will ever be as amusing or confusing as that fucking sweater. We then go backstage where Blackjack Bradshaw's losing his mind. Two unnamed jackasses just attacked Barry Windham, and Bradshaw wants a paramedic ASAP. Gee, I wonder who it was. The Truth Commission take on the Headbangers next on Raw, while over on Nitro, Hollywood Hogan and Eric Bischoff cut a promo. You thought Hulk was done promoting movies? Oh no, these two marketing geniuses are out here again to plug another shit film, only this time they're talking about Sting's movie. Steve Borden stars in, The Real Reason Men Commit Crimes. They plug the movie backwards here by saying the movie's gonna suck, but at least they're getting it out on TV. They say that this just proves to everyone that Sting's a Hollywood wannabe and all that stuff, but just think about this for a moment. The dark, mysterious vigilante of WCW who doesn't speak a word, and here's WCW plugging his romantic comedy that no one's gonna watch anyway. Why would Hogan and Eric wanna bring attention to this? Well, here's the movie poster, and if we zoom in here and, sorry about that, yeah, there it is. Eric Bischoff produced the movie. Your main babyface's character, which WCW have done a fine job of building up by the way, doesn't mean shit if there's a movie that needs plugged. Anyway, Hogan says he's calling out Sting tonight. Eric says if Sting wants to be in Hollywood, then Hollywood's standing in the ring right now. That doesn't sound right at all, but yeah. Sting doesn't show up yet, you gotta stay on the channel and maybe he'll show up a little later on. I checked out The Real Reason Men Commit Crimes on Rotten Tomatoes and it's a ghost town, not a single review. If we scroll down here to the cast, all we get is a picture of Sting looking all lonely. There's nobody here, there's nothing to see, just poor old Sting. He played a character named Sparkle in the movie, by the way, Sparkly Sting. Over on Raw, we have more intense Truth Commission action, Ghost Recon and Sniper Elite versus the Headbangers. The DOA came to the ring with Mosh and Thrasher, showing us that absolutely nothing was resolved between these factions at Survivor Series. The Jackal provided commentary once again and he jumped on the apron to take a bump. I didn't find this match very interesting, to be honest, but this sign right here that said HBK316, I kiss the booker's ass, gave me a good laugh. Anyway, the Headbangers beat the commission after Thrasher powerbomb Mosh on top of Ghost Recon. The Interrogator attacks Mosh and Thrasher after the bell. The Biker Michael Akers jump in the ring and we have ourselves a brawl. Let's just move on. Steve Austin cuts a promo on Raw while Saturn defends his TV title against Chris Benoit on Nitro. Saturn attacks Benoit during Chris's entrance, and inside the ring, Saturn performs a lariat. He then performs a pump-handled suplex. Chris manages to escape an arm trap with a few headbutts. Saturn gets punished in the corner, and the crowd lose their minds when Benoit fires up. Chris performs a back suplex, and he hits Saturn with a hard knife-edge chop. Benoit throws Saturn in the corner, and what we get here is probably the most flat ending to a match ever. Chris tries to pin Saturn, but Saturn sits on Benoit while grabbing the ropes. Nick Patrick counts to three, but Chris gets up immediately afterwards, and he hits a clothesline as if the match is going to continue. The timekeeper doesn't ring the bell right away, so fans are unsure if the match has ended or if it's still going on. Patrick has to order the timekeeper to ring the bell a few times, and as soon as the bell rings, the flock hits the ring. Benoit takes care of Sick Boy and Smackhead Kidman. He then applies the crossface to Saturn, but Fit Finlay then hits the ring and Benoit gets taken out with a tombstone piledriver. Imagine Finlay joining the flock. That could potentially be worse than Van Hammer. Speaking of Van Glamour, he shows up too as the flock feast on a defeated Chris Benoit. An old zombie grunge lord stands in the corner trying his absolute best to look all moody and shit, but it's not working at all. If there was ever a guy who had absolutely no jam, it had to be Van Hammer and the flock. Over on Raw, new IC champion Stone Cold comes to the ring and his next rivalry gets set up during this promo. Austin says he sat at home for 3 months drinking beer and he was still able to come back and reclaim his IC title because he's the toughest SOB in the World Wrestling Federation. Michael Cole says because Austin's the IC champ, there might as well be a bullseye painted on his forehead. And Austin says he'll paint a bullseye on Michael's ass and kick him all around the building. Cole didn't get any respect at all in these early days, did he? The Nation's music plays in the arena and out walks Rocky Maivia. This is a pretty important promo for Maivia because we get to see a new cocky demeanor from the future great one, and he also gives himself a brand new name. He says the people know when Rocky Maivia was IC champion, he was the best IC champion there ever was. Come hell or high water, Rocky Maivia will get his IC championship back, and Austin's bottom line will read that Stone Cold's a has-been.
Compliments of The Rock.
Austin has a few challenges for The Rock, seeing as Rocky's out here challenging Stone Cold. Austin challenges Rock to get a new haircut, and he challenges him to flush himself down the commode, seeing as he's a big piece of crap. Austin then grants Rocky that title shot, and he says The Rock doesn't suck because the fans say so, he sucks because Stone Cold says so. Rock's reactions were completely on point here, and he made the most of his limited time. Austin was good too. You can tell very early on that there's definitely something here, and thankfully, the WWF realized the two. Los Boricuas then came down to the ring for their upcoming match, but don't turn the channel over, because Steve motherfucking Blackman's getting interviewed by Jim motherfucking Ross on the outside. Blackman says he's unfamiliar with World Wrestling Federation rules, but he feels he helped his team last night in the Team USA versus Team Canada match. Jose of Los Boricuas isn't too happy about Blackman getting interview time during a Boricuas match, and he only goes and does this.
You're telling me to get out of your face?
Yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I ended up in this situation.
Over on Nitro, Nature Boy Ric Flair gets interviewed briefly by Mean Gene Okerlund, and it's announced here that Slick Rick will face Lex Luger in the Nitro main event. Three things Flair wants to make clear. Flair will win World War 3, Flair will disable Kurt Hennig, Jesus, and Lex Luger is the third top man in Memphis, Flair being number one, Elvis being number two, and Lex is number three. Flair says the countdown to World War starts tonight, and when Flair wins the Battle Royal, he and Mean Gene are going to have an all-night party with the Nitro girls. The New Age Outlaws take on the Blackjacks in a bunkhouse battle over on Raw, and on Nitro, Eddie Guerrero battles Rey Mysterio. After the instant classic at Halloween Havoc, and seeing as Guerrero vs Mysterio is also booked for World War 3, it's strange that this match got booked for Nitro, but it's not surprising either. The Cruiserweight title's on the line here, and Eddie tries to end it early with a pump handle backbreaker and a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, but Ray kicks out. Eddie misses a corner dropkick, though he lands on his feet after a monkey flip. Ray then delivers an impressive springboard head scissor takedown, and then Eddie gets floored with that monkey flip. Check out Ray's head scissor takedown right here while Eddie was on the outside. As good as this was, it didn't keep Guerrero down, and back in the ring, Eddie lands a superplex, but Ray kicks out of the follow-up cover. Ray answers with a springboard hurricanrana, but it doesn't end the match, so Ray tries a lion salt that maybe looked better than Chris Jericho's, but Guerrero continues to kick out. After applying a head scissors submission, Ray tries an Arabian press moonsault, but just like Halloween Havoc, Guerrero gets the knees up. Mysterio blocks a powerbomb attempt, but unfortunately, that springboard moonsault DDT spot from Halloween Havoc gets botched here. It's a shame too, because it's such a great move, but Ray's gonna try and end the match anyway with his West Coast pop. He leaps over to Eddie, but Guerrero catches Mysterio with a stun gun, and Eddie then wins the match and the Cruiserweight title after hitting the frog splash. That was kinda unexpected. Dean Malenko comes to the ring, and he and Eddie have a stare down before Malenko leaves again. And there you have it, Mysterio's Cruiserweight title reign has ended already, but he has a chance to win the championship again at World War 3. On Raw, it's revealed that the Outlaws attacked Barry Windham earlier. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So Bradshaw's gonna fight both these goons in a 2-on-1 street fight, and that can't be good. Bradshaw did pretty good to begin with. He threw Sean's white powder in Billy Gunn's face, and he took out both guys using trash cans, the ring steps, his own big boot, and a few clotheslines. On the outside, Bradshaw not only uses the timekeeper's table to clock Road Dogg, but he also swings a chair at Mr. James, and Road Dogg takes all the impact on his head. There's absolutely no chill tonight in the war zone. It ends when Bradshaw sets Billy Gunn up for a superplex on the chair, but Gunn counters with a tornado DDT. Both Gunn and James cover Bradshaw, and Bradshaw loses this bunkhouse battle on Raw. This was one of the earliest examples of a full-blown WWF hardcore match. It was purely weapons-based, and back then it was pretty fun too, though those chair shots couldn't be good. We'll be seeing a lot more unprotected chair shots as we continue through this series though, so if that's something you don't like to see, well, sorry. That Jeff Jarrett interview that was skipped over last week gets aired next on Raw, while over on Nitro, Randy Savage takes on Ray Traylor. After Jarrett gets done putting himself over, saying the World Wrestling Federation got him at a bargain when we consider his experience in the ring, Ross asks Jarrett what he thinks of Bret Hart. Remember, this was recorded before Montreal. Jarrett says he's never beaten Bret Hart, but he'd like to get the opportunity to wrestle him again. Bret Hart may be the best there was, but the best there is and the best there ever will be is up for debate. And Jarrett also says he'd be surprised if Sean doesn't win the World Wrestling Federation title at Survivor Series. Jarrett then plays some word association. Here's his answers. Bret Hart, dedicated. The Nation, strength in numbers. Dude Love, respect. Randy Savage, hardest working wrestler Jarrett's ever known. Legion of Doom, raw ability. Eric Bischoff, right place, right time, right wallet. Hulk Hogan, charisma and intelligence equals success. Shawn Michaels, phenomenal athlete. Triple H, tag along. Jim Ross wonders if Shawn Michaels' juvenile antics annoy Jarrett, and Jeff says as long as HBK isn't juvenile around him, then it's fine. Jarrett's 100% right when he says HBK has frustrations in his real life and he's venting those frustrations through his actions on TV. The thing is, Shawn Michaels is making a lot of money while doing it, and he's stealing the show by being one of the best wrestlers in the world. Like Jeff or not, he was on point here. On Nitro, Ray Traylor kicked Macho Man's ass for a fair portion of their match, with Randy looking like he was in trouble more than once. Someone must have been watching Raw, because Savage takes a chair shot right to the head too, and back in the ring, Savage gets floored with a big boot and a spinebuster. Tony Schiavone's still talking about Bret Hart, and it sounds like he now believes what Eric said earlier. The former WWF champion has already joined the New World Order. Ray goes to the top rope, but Elizabeth grabs his foot. Taylor gets his wee boss man smashed on the top turnbuckle, an elbow drop from Macho Man secures a victory, but Randy isn't done yet. He sends Liz away to grab a spray can, and Big Ray takes another 3 elbow drops. Ray gets spray painted on his belly, though it looks like Liz forgot the name of the faction and she just gave him a full spray tan. And that's how it ended. Ray Traylor gets destroyed, and the Macho Man is still the cream of the crop. Big Butterballs gets interviewed next on Raw, while DDP takes on Kurt Hennig on Nitro. So at this time, Butterbean was an 18-time Tough Man competition winner and the IBA Super Heavyweight Champion, but that's nothing at all when compared to a real boxer like Marvelous Mark Merrow. Mero interrupts the interview before Butterscotch can even talk, and forgot to mention this earlier, Mero's wearing that bandana that Davey Boy wiped his ass on at Survivor Series last night, making Mero a total shithead. Mero says Cole should interview a real boxer like himself and not this loser Butterbean, a man who's beaten nobody but truck drivers. Mero warns Butterbean never to touch his wife, never look at his wife. Butterbean better stay away from Sable or Mark Mero will slap him around the ring. So confident is Mero that he says he could beat Butterbean in 4 rounds or less. Mero warns Butterbean again never to look at Sable, and Butterbean looks totally confused. Mero's insecurities are going to get him knocked the fuck out very, very soon. Mero leaves, and Michael Cole tries to continue the interview, but Butterbean's all upset now. You ever see or hear those people whose voice goes really high when they get angry? That's Butterbean.
You know, I've been married, but you know, it's not like I'm wanting to go out with another. No!
DDP versus Kurt Hennig then, and I got a bit of backlash from you guys when I ripped into Hennig getting booked for all those main events, and again, I like Mr. Perfect, but I just don't think these short Nitro matches suited him at all. This DDP rivalry has gone nowhere too, and I do think Hennig's WCW work with Flair was way better than the stuff with Dallas, and in Dallas's case, his work with Randy Savage was leagues better. But Kurt Hennig for sure is a storyteller in the ring, and what I've learned watching his WCW run so far is that Kurt didn't get a chance to tell stories on Nitro. Bret Hart falls into that same category, so that should have been worrying for a lot of Hitman fans. They have pretty much the same match as always here. They spit on each other, Hennig takes his time out and he tries to leave the match. The taped up ribs became a target for Kurt, and the crowd chanted for Dallas as he tried to make his comeback. Kurt misses a punt kick and he tries to leave the ring again. Dallas brings him back in and the crowd gets all fired up when Page levels Hennig. Kurt's bump here was great as always. Dallas pancakes Hennig, he signals for the cutter, but Hennig counters with a jawbreaker. The match ends when Kurt hits DDP with his US title and the referee calls for the bell, another DQ finish. Kurt goes to hit Dallas again, but Dallas gets a foot up and Kurt decides to leave the ring afterwards. The belt smashing into Kurt's face results in Hennig getting a busted lip, and there's nothing more to say here really. It's still not a bad match, but we've seen this match layout numerous times now. The Undertaker makes his in-ring return with a match against Common next. Over on Nitro, we've got the Ric Flair versus Lex Luger main event. Undertaker hasn't wrestled since Bad Blood and since his little brother arrived on the scene, but unfortunately, Kane isn't going to let The Undertaker just come out here and pretend like nothing happened. Jim Ross putting Taker over on commentary during the entrances was fantastic. Ross says everyone's running around calling themselves an icon, but there's only one true phenom, and that's The Undertaker. Never since Andre the Giant has there been a man who walks the face of the earth with as much presence and force as The Undertaker. Ross then begins talking about Survivor Series. He plugs the encore by saying last night was Bret Hart's last WWF match. The ending of the match was extremely controversial, and if you missed it and you want to see what happened, you gotta buy the encore presentation. Taker starts off strong with a big boot, a clothesline, and a leg drop, but Kama replies with a back elbow and a ton of strikes in the corner. Kama thinks he has it all figured out, he sends Taker into the ropes, but Taker puts on the brakes, and already we see the choke slam. That's the match over already. Undertaker sends Kama to the outside with a clothesline, and then the lights go out in the arena. Kane's music begins to play, the stage pyro goes off, and The Undertaker gets another good look at his little brother as Kane and Paul Bearer stand on the entranceway. Paul says it would be easy for Kane to walk down the ramp and destroy The Undertaker, but that's not what he wants. He wants The Undertaker to suffer the same way he did for the sin The Undertaker committed. Kane wants Undertaker one-on-one, no interference and no excuses. He wants a match with his older brother so he can show the leeches of the night that he's superior. Undertaker tells Paul to shut up or the dead man will rip his throat out. Undertaker then tells Kane that the man who stands next to him is nothing more than an infectious disease, and he's poisoned Kane's mind. The Undertaker's little brother is somewhere behind that mask, and there's some good left in Kane. There has to be. Undertaker offers Kane the chance to stand beside the Phenom as his little brother because there's one thing that will never happen. The Undertaker will never fight his own flesh and blood. That match that Kane wants, it's not gonna happen. Bearer says all the agony that he and Kane are gonna cause and all the souls that are gonna get destroyed, that's all on The Undertaker, saying as he won't accept the match. Kane signals for his ring pyro to go off and the promo ends. These more supernatural storylines can go one of two ways really, and the WWF or WWE tend to miss the mark sometimes when it comes to the more out there storylines, for a lack of a better term, but this Undertaker versus Kane stuff was already very entertaining, I thought. I'm looking forward to seeing more destruction from the Big Red Machine. Flair versus Luger then on Nitro. Would you believe me if I said this was another DQ finish? Of course you would, why wouldn't you? I thought WCW were going to build this one up a little after the ending of last week's Nitro, but here we are. Luger completely owns Flair to begin with. Flair goes down after a shoulder block and a gorilla press slam. Flair then gets clotheslined over the top rope, but it's on the outside where Flair finally gets in some offense, though his chop only makes Luger's titties bounce around a little. Back in the ring, Luger continues no-selling the chops, and Flair goes down after a clothesline. Lex's chest has been lit up big time, but he feels no pain. There's only one way Rick can get out of this predicament, and that's with a thumb to the eye followed by a chop block. This makes the crowd pop, by the way. Flair then takes his sweet time. He's gonna prep Lex up for the figure four by constantly kicking the leg and knee. Nate then wraps Luger's leg around the middle rope, and the ref steps in to break the hold. We then see the figure four. Lex manages to get the shoulders up, but the hold stays applied for an extended period of time. And when Lex rolls out and when Lex gets to the ropes, the crowd boos. This is a pro Ric Flair crowd tonight in the Mid-South Coliseum. Flair tries to suplex Luger to the outside, but the total package counters, remembering to sell the knee afterwards. Rick tries another few chops, but again, they do nothing to Luger, and the Nature Boy goes down after another press slam. Lex is all fired up. We see the corner bump. We see a superplex. Flair takes a power slam, and the crowd are now getting behind the total package. Before we see the torture rack, Kurt Hennig shows up and the ref calls for the bell, so it's over, it's a DQ. Flair attacks Kurt, and Luger watches on as Flair and Kurt fight on the outside. The match definitely improved as it went on, and it wasn't all that bad. I've definitely warmed up to Hennig versus Flair a bit more too since Halloween Havoc, so the main event worked. The DQ finishes during Nitro main events though, they are a problem. Ken Shamrock versus Triple H ends Raw this week while Hulk Hogan calls out Sting on Nitro. Sergeant Slaughter sends DX back to the dressing room. This is going to be a one-on-one fight. Shamrock destroys Hunter at the opening bell, and Triple H decides he's going to leave. Shamrock chases Hunter up the ramp, and the world's most dangerous man isn't going to let Triple H take the easy way out. Shamrock again destroys Triple H with strikes on their way back to the ring, and back inside the rope, Shamrock punches the back of Hunter's head. Helmsley's getting annihilated in this main event. Finally, Hunter fires back with his facebreaker knee smash, and he delivers a great looking DDT. Shamrock then gets thrown over the guardrail, and Triple H argues with Sergeant Slaughter just before we take our final commercial break. Ravishing Rick Rude has also shown up. We come back to see Kenny Boy getting chin locked, and Rick Rude smiles as Hunter drops the knee on Shamrock. Jim Ross calls Rude the world's most dangerous insurance man. The whole audience begin chanting "We want bread" as Shamrock gets thrown to the outside. Shamrock then bumps on the ring steps, and again Hunter talks smack to Sergeant Slaughter before the match resumes in the ring. Shamrock tries to mount a comeback, but an inverted atomic drop kills the momentum. Triple H then hits the Harley Race high knee, and Helmsley claws at Shamrock's face after Ken kicks out of the follow-up pin. After delivering an electric chair drop, Shamrock builds his final comeback of the match. He hits a jumping back elbow, a jumping back kick, and a Frankensteiner. Ravishing Rick Rude then jumps on the apron and Slaughter intercepts him, but this allows Hunter to stick a thumb in Shamrock's eye and knock the referee out. Still, Shamrock hits the belly to belly and he applies the ankle lock as Slaughter also intercepts China, but the numbers are just too much. Shawn Michaels runs down the ramp, he catches the briefcase, Shamrock gets wiped out, and that's how it ends. Hunter does eventually cover Shamrock, but the ref gets pulled away by Slaughter. Gotta be fair too, the WWF were getting fond of DQ finishes also, or inconclusive main events, but at the same time, they weren't nearly as constant as WCW. Still, I wasn't a fan of the finish, and I wasn't really a fan of the Shamrock vs. Michaels rivalry either. Hogan says he talked to the NWO and they all agreed that Hogan's the man. Sting and all these Hollywood wannabes out here are nothing but pukes. Hulk says he wants Sting to get inside the ropes right now and Hogan will crucify him in the middle of the ring. Bischoff says Sting's afraid and even Eric himself can't make Sparkly Sting show up. But ask and you shall receive, gentlemen. The Stinger's here on Nitro. He approaches the ring. He steps inside the ropes to get that crucifixion. Hogan throws down the belt. Sting throws the bat down. Here we go, and no. The NWO hit the ring and Sting gets wrecked. The whole faction's here, they hold Sting up while Hulk gets in a few cheap shots. Hogan says Sting's nothing before hitting him with a leg drop, and we see two more leg drops before Nitro goes off the air. The NWO get one over on the Stinger tonight on Nitro, you can't win them all unfortunately. And again, what can I say really? Good seeing Sting and all that, but it's another NWO beatdown. Two very fascinating promos to start off our shows this week, and it's fascinating looking back and seeing how both companies dealt with the Bret Hart situation, but still, I'm giving this one to Raw. Overall, it was just a better show with way better promos and a decent enough main event. The NWO's opening promo was good though. I wish I could say Mysterio vs. Guerrero was another show stealer, but it was nowhere near as good as the pay-per-view match. Raw's in the lead with 48 points, Nitro has 46, and we're on 13 ties. Nitro wins in the TV ratings with a 4.3 while Raw drew a 3.4, their biggest rating so far on a show that didn't go unopposed. Not gonna lie guys, recording this week's episode sucked and God knows what the editing process is gonna be like, but thanks for putting up with me and thanks for joining me for another Monday Night Battle. If there's a delay in the next episode or any other videos on the channel, then you know the reason why. Next week, Vince McMahon breaks his silence about the Bret Hart situation with the infamous Bret Screwed Bret interview, Big Squeaky Butterballs is back on Raw, and Rocky Maivia steals Austin's IC Championship belt. On Nitro, we've got Mongo vs. Alex Wright, The Giant vs. Scott Hall, and the NWO add a very, very interesting new member to the faction. Again, I appreciate you sticking this one out. Thanks for watching, guys, and take care.